And we've been looking in the book of Deuteronomy for help in our worship of God. We want to worship His way. And these Old Testament patterns and pictures are helping us, I hope, with some New Testament interpretation to worship our loving God. We're going to read verse 1 to 15 of Deuteronomy 26. Moses said, "When you have entered the land that the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, and have taken possession of it and settled in it, take some of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and put them in a basket. Then go to the place that the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name, and say to the priest in office at the time, 'I declare today to the Lord your God that I have come to the land that the Lord swore to our forefathers to give us.' The priest shall take the basket from your hands and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. Then you shall declare before the Lord your God, 'My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians ill-treated us and made us suffer, putting us to hard labor. Then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, toil, and oppression. So the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and with miraculous signs and wonders. He brought us to this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, O Lord, have given me. Place the basket before the Lord your God, and bow down before him. And you and the Levites and the aliens among you shall rejoice in all the good things the Lord your God has given you and your household. When you have finished setting aside a tenth of all your produce in the third year, the year of the tithe, you shall give it to the Levite, the alien, the fatherless and the widow, so that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. Then say to the Lord your God, I have removed from my house the sacred portion, and have given it to the Levite, the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, according to your commands. I have not turned aside from your commands, nor have I forgotten any of them. I have not eaten any of the sacred portion while I was in mourning, nor have I removed any of it while I was unclean, nor have I offered any of it to the dead. I have obeyed the Lord my God. I have done everything you commanded me. Look down from heaven, your holy dwelling place, and bless your people, Israel, and the land you have given us, as you promised on oath to our forefathers, a land flowing with milk and honey." Amen. Well, according to the advert, the ultimate sign of love and affection is to give someone your very last Rolo. You can't do anything more loving than that, can you? And we all know that it seems more sacrificial to give somebody your last Rolo than, say, your third Rolo. The last Rolo is the one that you savour and suck and make last as long as you possibly can. After that one, no more delicious milk chocolate with caramel swirl centre for you. It's all over, isn't it? But I ask you, is your last Rolo really the greatest sacrifice you could have made? I mean, isn't the first Rolo the one that tastes the best after all? If you've already scoffed down the best part of a packet of Rolos, the last one, by the end, tastes pretty ordinary to me. You can take it or leave it, really. Besides, think of it like this. Once you get to the last Rolo, the eventual destiny of the first nine Rolos is secure, isn't it? It's gone to the right place already. If you offer somebody your first Rolo, what's to say they won't be after Rolo 3, 5 and 9 as well? You know what loved ones are like. Give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Well, there's rather more than chocolate at stake here. I want to conclude this part of our studies on the theme of worship from Deuteronomy by concentrating on just one idea. And that is this principle, this idea of the first fruits. Offering God the first fruits of the land he had given his people. Your beloved may swoon at being offered the last rolo, but God wants the first. In fact, God expected his people to give him the first and the best of everything that their land produced. The grain, the oil, the wine, the animals, you name it. The ceremony described here in Deuteronomy 26 was a one-off to be carried out when each farmer acquired his family's new land as they went into the land of Israel. And it produced crops for the first time. This particular ceremony was the one-off acknowledgement of that. But the principle of offering your first fruits to God was observed more generally as well, as a regular ceremony. Exodus 23, verse 19 simply says, "Bring the best of the first fruits of the soil to the house of the Lord your God." Offering the first fruits to God was part of this wider system of tithing that operated in the land. Now, the biblical data on Old Testament giving on this subject is patchy. Nobody is actually entirely sure how the tithing worked out in practice, because we don't know whether the various references in the books of Moses are to the same or the different, or to different provisions. We don't know whether later ones superseded the previous ones or added to them. After all, they were going through a changing situation from the wilderness to the promised land. But broadly speaking, people were to give 10% of their produce to the Lord. And that should be the best, the first 10%. Some of that would then be enjoyed as a feast of worship and celebration by the whole community, the whole family. The rest would then go to support the priests and the Levites for the hard work that they did in the temple, work that they did instead of having their own lands and crops to fund them. So if you turn back to chapter 18 briefly, you'll see that principle explained there. 18 verse 1, "The priests who are Levites, indeed the whole tribe of Levi, are to have no allotment or inheritance with Israel. They shall live on the offerings made to the Lord by fire, for that is their inheritance. They shall have no inheritance among their brothers. The Lord is their inheritance, as he promised them. This is the share due to the priests from the people who sacrifice a bull or a sheep, the shoulder, the jowls, and the inner parts. You are to give them the first fruits." There it is. "First fruits of your grain, new wine and oil, and the first wool from the shearing of your sheep. For the Lord your God has chosen them and their descendants out of all your tribes to stand and minister in the Lord's name always." So the first fruits and the tithe provided for the work in the temple, except in the third year, because it seems then that the first fruits and the tithes were distributed locally to needy people in the towns and villages. Back to 26, we saw that in verse 12, didn't we? "When you finish setting aside a tenth of all your produce in the third year, the year of the tithe, you should give it to the Levite, the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, so that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied." So you see that the first fruits were there to be used for God's worship and for God's work, to summarize. That's what they were there for. God's worship, God's work in the nation. And the point of the first fruits is that they were a guarantee, a promise of a full harvest to come. They were the first sign that God was going to come along and complete what the business that he'd begun in giving Israel the promised land. Hence, the farmer had to run through that history of all the good things God had done to save them and bring them to that point of receiving the first delicious fruits in the land that he had given. Now, with that thought in mind, how is the idea used in the New Testament? Well, it's used in several points. Let me take you through some briefly. According to Paul, Jesus Christ is the first fruits of the resurrection. The first fruit of the resurrection. So it's been turned into a very interesting idea in the New Testament, hasn't it? 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 20. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 20, says, "But Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep." Ah, so just as those first grains were the promise of something wonderful to come, so Jesus Christ being raised from the dead is the promise of the resurrection for all who have died in him. Another angle on it, the Holy Spirit in our lives is the first fruits of that resurrection to come. Now flick back to Romans chapter 8, verse 23. Romans 8, verse 23 says, "Not only so, but we ourselves have the first fruits of the Spirit, grown inwardly, as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies." Ah, I see. So what we experience of God now in the Holy Spirit is the promise of the fullness to come in the resurrection, you see? And then James adds to this the idea that Christian believers themselves, ourselves, are in a sense first fruits of God's work. The first fruits of God's work. James chapter 1, verse 18. James 1, verse 18 says, "He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created." So you see, this idea is being used to talk about a very spiritually important concept, isn't it? And I hope we can see the relevance of that in a few minutes. But this evening I don't intend to be a long exposition of all of this, just to make you aware of it. What I've got here for you tonight isn't some rigorously worked out structured sermon. Trainee preachers don't copy me this evening. I just want to dwell on this idea, meditate upon it a bit, that the first and the best of the fruit of the land was offered to God. It all belongs to him, but that part was actually offered and given to him in person. It strikes me that our lives and our worship as Christians today would greatly benefit from the application of the first fruit principle. You see, I'm afraid that we very often don't, in any tangible way, offer God the first fruit of our redeemed lives. What we're actually offering him is the last Rolo in our packet. We give him what is left after we have had our fill of chocolate and caramel swirl. And then perhaps we resent it, or we persuade ourselves that we have been very noble and sacrificial to have done this. And that, of course, is if there ever was a Rolo left at the end of our packet at all. Because, in practice, without ever quite meaning to gobble the lot, that last Rolo is very often squidging between our teeth before we've given God even a sniff of it. And he has to make do with some lame promise about having the last two Rolos next week. That's the danger of saving the last Rolo for God. All right, so I'm speaking a bit whimsically, I know that. But I don't think this is very serious, important. I'm not trying to give you here just another sermon from the pastor, merely trying to get a bigger slice of your life for the church. Merely tax collecting for God. The first fruits, the tithe, they weren't a 10% tax. A burden, but then once you'd paid it off, you'd given God his chunk, well, you could forget about him and enjoy the rest without him interfering. No, that misunderstands it. The point of bringing the first fruit to God was that acknowledged that it all came from him. It was all his gift to you in the first place. The first fruits were the guarantee of the full harvest to come. But if they remembered him with the first and the best of what he'd given them, he would gladly allow them to enjoy the rest and multiply the rest. So the point of tithes and offerings wasn't to pay God off so that he didn't interfere with the rest of life. Rather, it was to deliberately involve him in the rest of life too. Now in the New Testament, this whole life lived to God idea reaches its fulfillment. For Christians, as the first fruits of God's work, worship is not to be some occasional activity on a Sunday, or even a regular activity on a Sunday with a thrown-in midweek meeting too, as if that summarized what worship was. Worship is a word to describe the whole of your life and being. Look at Romans 12. This is perhaps the most important New Testament text that I want to reflect on this evening. Romans chapter 12. Just as the ancient Israelite farmer would rehearse the salvation of God, so the book of Romans does the same. And then it brings us to this point of application in verse 12, verse 1. Therefore, wrote Paul, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Now, bodies here means all your capacities in life. All of your life, not just your physical nature. And worship means obedient service of the whole of your life. Or put it another way, we are the sacrifices, we are the first fruits of Christ's work being offered back to God. Everything about us is to be holy and pleasing to God. It all, 24/7, is spiritually meaningful. From the highest endeavor to the humblest task, from the deliberate acts of worship here in church together, through to the ordinary work of life, everything we say and do is to be offered to him as a holy living sacrifice. What a wonderfully holistic view of life that is, eh? Isn't that inspiring and life-changing? We're not chopping our life up into bits, God's bit, the rest? No. We're offering the whole to him, and it all can be so precious and special. Trouble is, in practice, for many sincere believers, it's the theory but not the reality. It's just not very real. For all the noble talk of whole life worship, many of us find that in practice, we're completely consumed by totally secular preoccupations, with hardly a conscious thought for God, let alone a deliberate word or action. When Sunday morning or a Thursday evening or whatever comes around, then at best it's an opportunity to escape from the world for a bit, to catch up with what we know we really ought to have been. At worst, well, it can be just another thing to be crammed into an over-busy week. Another pressure on our time, another demand that we have to fulfill. At best, what you have to offer God is your last precious rolo, at the risk of feeling a bit smug about how sacrificial you are. And at worst, you've got nothing but an empty packet. And then you feel guilty about it, don't you? And in trying to encourage people to live a life of worship to God, I often feel that I am simply trying to crowbar an extra thing in on top of or underneath or alongside lives that are already desperately busy and full and preoccupied. In encouraging already busy people to worship on a Sunday or to pray on a Thursday as well as their other business. In encouraging strapped people to give faithfully. In encouraging tired, worn-out people to serve sacrificially, I feel like very often I'm snatching the last roller from people's numb fingers. And I suppose we're touching on a number of issues, really. First, it's the tendency to divide life up into the boss's bit and the family's bit and my bit and God's bit. And then, of course, the order in priority in which you put those things. Or is the problem the other way round? I don't know. Whatever, I'm not saying that the answer is simply increase the size of God's bit of your life. That's not what we're saying. You could up his allocation to 5 rolos, to 9.5 rolos. But if they're the last 9.5 rolos, he won't be satisfied. And you'll just be burnt out trying to live on 0.5 rolo yourself. That's why I think the principle of the first fruits would help us. Maybe the key to living this wonderfully attractive whole life of worship is to make sure that we have consciously and deliberately given the first and the best specifically to him. So sanctifying and blessing the rest that we live out in everyday life. Take our attitude to Sundays, for instance. How do you think of a Sunday in your week? Where does it fit? For many people in this world, the week is to be survived in order to reach the weekend. Saturday and Sunday are your reward for the drudgery of Monday to Friday. Saturday and Sunday are your opportunity for nights out on the town, for lions in the morning, for trips to the supermarket, to B&Q, to the beach, or the car boot sale. Your opportunity to catch up on those family visits, or whatever. For the non-Christian, Sunday is very definitely the last rolo in your packet. And it is very unreasonable of God to demand so much of it for church. And if you become a Christian, but you still think like that, then you may find that you either resent church and therefore don't enjoy it, or you can end up feeling rather smug that you are such a martyr to give it up. Neither is worship. But the point is, Sunday isn't the last day of a tired, worn-out old week. Sunday is the first day of a new week. In the very early days, the Christian church changed its day of worship from the last day of the week, the Sabbath, to the first day, the Lord's Day, the day when Jesus rose from the grave as the first fruits of the resurrection. So understood correctly, on Sunday we're not sacrificing our reward for a hard week's work past. No, we are setting the agenda, aren't we, for a week of worship ahead. And if we have given that to God, we are now far more likely to both glorify God and be satisfied ourselves with that week ahead. What difference might it make to our services in church if more people saw it as the first fruits of a new week rather than the last rolo of the old, grudgingly extracted? Then what about other areas? Remember those problems with giving up that last rolo? You tend to resent it more, which means there's less joy in it, and you're less likely to actually give it at all, which means that other people end up having to give their last 2 rolos instead to keep the ball rolling. Not fair on them. Remember the pleasures of giving your first fruits. God's worship is encouraged. God's work is done. What if we gave the first fruits of our money rather than the loose change at the end? If more of us set apart our giving to God first rather than waited to see what was left over when we had covered everything else, we would be far more cheerful about it and God's work would be far better funded. What if we gave the first fruits of our time? You're busy, of course. Everyone's busy, aren't they? And I'm sure that you really do only have limited time and opportunity for specifically spiritual things. So be it. The question is, are those things your first priority, or simply one of the leisure options that you slot in when the other vital tasks have been done? What goes in your diary first, and what fits around it? Are those 5 minutes that you can spend with God the first fruits of your day or the fag end of your day. If they were the first fruits, if they were the prime time, maybe then the rest of our lives would be worship as well as hard work. What if we gave, say, the first fruits of our reading? Someone in the church suggested that to me. Or the first fruits of our entertainment time to God. Rather than us squeezing devotions in around the TV and football schedules and party invitations and everything else, what if you set your mind to seek God first and then see what else he fitted into your life? Maybe you'd find yourself then actually growing spiritually rather than simply trying to undo the damage that the world is doing to you all the time. Maybe then Romans 12 verse 2 would start to actually become true. It says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. We're not saying you never watch a television program or read a book. We're saying that you let God set the agenda in your mind first, so that then you can deal with whatever else you might happen to read or watch. What if we gave, say, the first fruits of our holidays, the first fruits of our retirement to God? A mission trip rather than a cruise. Just as much fun and far more good. What if we gave the first fruits of our houses and cars? Not quite sure what that would actually mean, but maybe you do. What if we gave the first fruit of our lips to God? What if we made a point of speaking his praise at an early point in a conversation or meeting, rather than as an afterthought if he gets mentioned at all? And I could go on, but I hope you get my point. And I don't claim to have given you a sharply argued set of points this evening, just something to meditate upon, to chew upon. Perhaps, as you do so, God will challenge you with some aspect of your life in which he presently gets the last begrudged Rolo, if he gets one at all. Maybe you can think of some specific way in which you know God is calling you to offer him the first fruits of your life. If so, then do it. I warn you, like other loved ones, if you offer him the first Rolo, he may well want the rest as well. But you won't mind giving them to him too, because he gives so much more in return. God is no one's debtor. Be sure of that. When his people offer him the first fruit of their lives, God's worship and God's work is done in all the rest of your life. And you may even get to eat that last Rolo yourself. You never know.